Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Dawn B., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Southern California. Today is Wednesday, February 3rd, 2021, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 34, the third paragraph, How Then Shall We?, reading and commenting on that one paragraph only. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Alice G., 12 Traditions, Dory P. Reader of the text this morning is Debbie E. Freya H. will read page 164, and our backup reader is Karen K. The reference number for Tuesday, February 2nd, 10 a.m. is 16,319. That's 16319. And for this morning, Wednesday, February 3rd, the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, the reference number was 16,323. That's 16323. Our newcomer greeter this morning will be Kaylee R., and Leslie M. will do the announcements. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive overeating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Alice G. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Alice.
Good morning, all. Alice G., recovering compulsive overeater in Wisconsin, currently in Florida. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for the opportunity to serve.
Thank you so much, Alice G. And I'll now ask Dory P. to read the 12 traditions. Good morning, Dory.
Good morning. Dory P., recovered in Georgia. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, film, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me do service.
Thank you so much, Dori P. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book, and we're on page 34, the third paragraph. That starts with, how then shall we? Reading and commenting on that one paragraph only. I will now ask Deb E. to begin reading. Good morning, Deb.
Good morning. This is Deb E., recovered compulsive eater in Israel. How then shall we help our readers determine to their own satisfaction whether they are one of us? The experiment of quitting for a period of time will be helpful, but we think we can render an even greater service to alcoholic sufferers and perhaps to the medical fraternity. So we shall describe some of the mental states that precede a relapse into drinking, for obviously this is the crux of the problem. Right. When I was first introduced to the Big Book, I was aware that I was a compulsive overeater. I wasn't necessarily aware of everything that meant that I'm an addict and everything that goes along with that. However, here they seem to be addressing the people who may not yet be convinced after reading the first few chapters of this book that they are in fact alcoholic or, in our case, compulsive overeaters. So the question is how to convince them if in fact they are one of us. The experiment of quitting for a period of time. That wouldn't necessarily have convinced me at first. I was able to stop for periods of time, which further reinforced the denial that it wasn't so bad, that I wasn't actually a compulsive overeater. But those periods of time grew shorter and shorter until finally it didn't work anymore. And I had to get knocked down quite a few times to be convinced that I needed help and could not figure this out on my own. But the mental states that preceded my taking that first compulsive bite always originated from the same place, a lack of spirituality in my life. It was only when I felt that emptiness that for me goes hand in hand with not connecting to a power greater than myself and thinking that I can do everything on my own that the door was open for the next binge. The crux of the problem was that I knew nothing about humility or surrender. The problem was that I thought the excess food was the only problem. I had no idea that the real problem was that I was completely disconnected. I was looking for a solution in the next diet or the next workout, not in a higher power and a life of service, acceptance, and surrender that I know to be the answer today. Now with that, I'll pass. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Thank you so much, Deb E. I will now be opening up the line to take names of people who would like to share on this paragraph. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So who would like to share with us this morning?
Freya H.
Freya H.
Kathy Hello.
O.
Was that Kathy?
It was Kathleen O.
Okay. Hello. Kathleen O. Who else did Hello. I miss? Was that
Carrie
Noel?
C. Noel E. Yeah.
Noel E. Carrie Jo C.
Sherry. Thanks. Sherry
okay,
Jo.
Sherry. Sherry Jo C. Okay. All right. I have Freya H., Kathleen O., Noel E., and Sherry Jo C. Did I miss anyone? Okay. Let's start with those four. Good morning, Freya, and please let us know what state or country you're calling from this morning.
Good morning. This is Freya H., and I am in Colorado. I'm recovered from post-date appointment. Thanks for thanks everybody for making this meeting happen. Very similar to what the reader just said, that this is how we can find out if we really have this disease. You know, that this isn't just about whether or not we can, you know, we struggle with food or, you know, food behaviors of some kind.
Excuse me, Freya. There seems to be some static on the line. I don't know if there's
any
adjustment
better?
You can. Oh, that's perfect. Thank you so much.
I'm so sorry. A headset. Easy fix. So that I feel like this paragraph is transitioning us from, you know, acknowledging and identifying with the physical allergy piece, and it's introducing the idea that actually the mental state is the crux of the problem. And, you know, that question of, do I have this disease? It's up to me to determine, do I have it or not? You know, do I have that physical allergy, which for me doesn't always show up as wanting more food. Sometimes it shows up as the allergy, you know, the phenomenon of craving for more of a certain behavior. So it can be more of a certain food. It could be more restricting. It could be more exercise. It could be more obsession. But recognizing that is, you know, that's my physical allergies. I just, you know, what more of the same, whatever that is. But the greater part of my disease is the mental state. So when I came in to OA, I knew I belonged not because I had, you know, serious weight or health problems or even serious, you know, life issues going on, but I knew because people were describing the thinking around food and the baffling nature of this disease that I cannot, this takes up so much space in my head, and no matter how hard I try, I cannot leave it alone. Even if I'm not eating it or engaging in the behavior, I'm thinking about it. If I'm not doing it, I'm thinking about not doing it. And so that craziness is what makes me know that I belong here. And it's such a relief because I know that these people who wrote this book get it. And so they have a solution that will actually work for me. So it's very comforting to be able to come in here and diagnose myself with the, you know, with the hope that there is a solution and it's going to work for me too. So I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Freya H. And Kathleen O., will you share with us now, followed by Noel E.? Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning, Dawn. This is Kathleen O. in Northern California, recovered by the grace of God today. So we shall describe some of the mental states that precede a relapse into drinking. So the important point here is what goes on in our heads before we pick up again and again, because relapse is hell. And all action is born in thought. So what's the thinking that goes on before deciding to take that first bite? You know, why and how did my thinking set me up to take that bite that always triggered the allergy of the body, the obsession of the mind, and that always set me off on a spree because my best thinking got me over to over 200 pounds. So, you know, I had to know I had a problem because no matter what I tried, I couldn't stay stopped. And I needed a power greater than myself that could do for me what I couldn't do for myself, given, you know, set to my own devices, I was in my own knowledge, nothing ever worked. And my own self-will wasn't working. And the true nature of my problem was truly between my ears. You know, there's that strange mental twist, the thinking when I would get restless, irritable, discontent, and then repeating time after time the experience of the first bite. And, you know, the insanity was when I'd make the decision to eat again after actually being successful on the latest diet and losing weight. I'd be in a thin body and I'd make a decision to eat again. And that's really the insanity of it, is taking that bite when I wasn't in the food. And, you know, just inviting that food back in once again. You know, the flame is out, but the pilot light is always lit. So I had to admit I was powerless, because there's no peace or freedom until I surrendered. So I realized I was going to any length to get the food. Why couldn't I go to any length to get abstinent? And so, you know, that's basically what I did. I finally realized if I didn't feel the need for a higher power and to work through these steps, I would once again find myself binging again. So the first step is to put down the food. And, you know, I would be on a lot of meetings, and there is nothing worse than what my old sponsor used to say to me. There's nothing worse than a head full of program and a belly full of food. So put the food down, find the higher power, work the steps. It does work. Thanks. I passed on.
Thank you so much, Kathleen. Noelle E., will you share with us now, followed by Sherry Jo C., and then I'll be opening up the lines to take more names. Good morning, Noelle. Please tell us where you're calling from.
Good morning. It's Noelle E., recovered compulsive overeater gratefully, recovered from Louisiana. I hope I can be heard. I'm in the car. Thank you, everybody, for your service on this line. So powerful. I just want to say, in this reading, if anybody could make it to page 34 in this book and still be wondering whether they're one of us, they are so different than me. Like, it was, you know, it is such a powerful thing to be surrounded by people who are describing your experience that I didn't even have the language for until I heard it described by people here. And basically what I was doing for all the culturally conditioned milestones that come with being a woman of my age was periods of experimentation of, you know, seeing if I could not be in the food and if I could get to a certain weight and look a certain way until graduation from college, until I got engaged, until I got married, until we bought a house, until I got pregnant. You know, it's just like those were all periods of experimentation where the food was always, it was just constant relapse. And constant negotiating and constant mental obsession about weighing and balancing and when can I have this and how can I present in front of people that this is how I eat, and then you know, in the car or in front of the television or wherever, make up for lost time. So, I also am in step 12 right now with my sponsor and, you know, concentrating on working with others. And I think about someone getting to this place and getting to this page and still having that curiosity. And it becomes important to describe some of the mental states that precede relapse into drinking. That's when I'm now understanding that I'll have to be able to talk about my experience, you know, in a way that just is completely, I don't know, without premeditation. just to go with it in the moment and let people know that I was powerless. So thank you for everybody, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Noelle E. Now, Sherry Jo C., will you share with us? And then I'm going to be opening up the lines to take more names. Good morning, Sherry Jo.
Good morning. This is Sherry Jo C., recovered in Southern California. Thank you so much. I love this paragraph. I really relate to it. How do we know what are the mental states that precede? Yeah, I mean, the first thing I think of is if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck. And I definitely, you know, the first time that I ever read the Big Book, honestly, I thought to myself, how do they know all this about me? I mean, I related to absolutely everything. And I'd always had a sneaking suspicion something was wrong with me. I just didn't know what. You know, and I'd always pursued self-knowledge. I mean, I was into self-help before it was a thing. I was always analyzing myself. I'm a researcher for a living, so, you know, I'm great at analyzing. And I always tried to fix myself. But what I was missing was the knowledge of the disease, that it is a disease, that it's a thing. It's not just me. It's not that there's just something broken or wrong about me. It's an actual thing. And the Big Book says, you know, armed with the facts, you know, that's when we can begin to recover. And I have to laugh, you know, we're going to read ahead about Jim because that part, it's going to say, you know, he had a nervous disposition. Otherwise, he was kind of normal. I'm like, I've always had a nervous disposition. I mean, I had a nervous disposition about taking the bus to kindergarten. Like, my mom used to have to talk me down from the ledge because I was, like, so anxious about getting on the bus. You know, they're going to talk about how he was kind of irritated at his position in life. Oh, my God, restless, irritable, and discontented. That was just me. Accompanied by this thought of, I deserve better than this. Like, that was how I lived back then. Obviously, the mental blank spot that precedes a binge, absolutely. That whole story about, you know, we go down the street and we fall in the hole and we didn't even realize there was a hole. I mean, that was me over and over again. I would find myself in the middle of binging and I wouldn't even realize how I got there. The mental obsession, you know, constantly. I mean, I thought, well, I'm not binging all the time. Well, of course I wasn't binging all the time. When I wasn't binging, I was thinking about binging. It was like one of the two. It was just two sides of a coin. But the part that really got me in the Big Book was where it said that the eating is but a symptom of deeper problems. And when I read that, something inside me, this was in the very beginning, I didn't know anything about the disease, but something inside me said, uh-oh. Like, someone told me recently that our bodies are actually designed to recognize the truth. Like, when we hear the truth, our bodies recognize it. And my body recognized that. And the whole, just everything inside me was kind of like, oh, crap. But there was another part of me that was like, oh, my God, what a relief. Like, these people, they understand me. You know, I was able to start seeing traits in myself, like how hard I push myself. I'm never satisfied with anything that I do. And this is still something that I continue to have to surrender to my higher power. I took a personality test long ago, and I was considered unrelenting standards. Thank you. So, you know, these are the things that I get to continue to work on in abstinence, in recovery. So grateful for this meeting and so grateful for all of you. I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Sherry Jo C. And now I'm going to be opening up the lines to take more names of people who would like to share. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. Who would like to share with us this morning?
Michael M.
Michael M.
Yes.
Shlomit Hanna. Who else would like to share?
Shawnee.
Matt
B.
J.
Was that
Karen.
Shauna?
Shawnee B.
Okay, Shawnee B.
Matt J.
Matt J.
Maren R.
Maren R.
Arlene
okay, I've
B.
got. And Carly B.
Arlene B.
Oh, Arlene B.
Thank you.
Okay, I've got Michael M., Shlomit Hanna, Shawnee B., Matt J., Maren R., and Arlene B. So we'll go ahead with Michael, if you'd start us off, followed by Shlomit Hanna. Good morning, Michael. Star 1, Michael M.
Sorry. Thank you so much for your service. And my name is Michael. I'm definitely recovered today, one day at a time. And I this paragraph is verbatim. It's me. And I just want to say, I mean, everything, my emotions, my nerves, it's just so me. And I love the big book. And I'm a long timer, but I was on a 2-year relapse. And I've been coming to vision again for a couple of years now. And I am on my maintenance, which I had not been in so many years, because I'm learning so much more from my insanity, from paragraphs, from, you know, every morning, if I miss the meeting, I'll go on the repeat line. And I'm just so very grateful that I know I'm emotional. I've always been. I've had anxiety since I'm a kid. I've had, you know, PTSD from parochial school. And learning and trying, attempting to stay on target, which is also hard. I am so ever grateful that I am now maintaining my original 60-pound weight loss, which is a miracle. And I really do believe it's, of course, the big book. And learning the big, especially now, being able to go on a big book meeting because I'm in another program, this is so wonderful, and I'm ever grateful. And God, you know, higher power, bless all, and be safe. And I live in Rockaway. Okay, am I allowed to give my no number now? Thank you so much, and I pass.
Thank you, Michael M. And yes, we do numbers after at the end of the meeting. All right, now Shlomit Hanna, will you share with us, please? Followed by Shawnee B. Good morning, Shlomit Hanna.
Yes, thank you so much. Thank you so much for your service. Thanks everybody for being on this meeting. I'm Shlomit Hanna B. in Philadelphia, and and the morning meeting, I had an epiphany as I was listening to the shares on this paragraph about the problem being in my mind. And I remembered what preceded my relapse. And what preceded my relapse after 11 and a half years of abstinence, not back-to-back perfect, but abstinence, was a lot of self-pity. I realize now I had gotten into, I was in a different fellowship, and I was looking a lot at my own trauma, and there was a lot of self-pity that was building and building and building and building. And the word selfish was a trigger word for me, because that was used to shame me as a child. And I was going to listen to a program speech, a qualification that my sponsor at the time had told me to listen to, suggested about selfishness, self-centeredness. And as soon as I heard that, the little 5-year-old in me exploded and started screaming, "I am not selfish!" And about a minute later, in my mind, I said, "You know what? I'm going to eat this. I'm going to eat this, and I'm going to eat that. I don't need this program. I don't need to be abused. I don't need to be angry." All of that self-pity just absolutely exploded and gave me the idea that I could pick up. And you know what? I was in relapse for 1.5 years and tried to get out of it and was in and out and in and out. But it really came clear to me today, just I never really thought about the whole level of insanity that preceded that first bite, and the process in which that insanity built, where it got stronger and stronger and stronger until I finally exploded and said, "Ugh, I don't need this. I can do it on my own." And you know what? I did do it on my own for about a day or maybe a week. But then the longer I was in relapse, the more I saw that I couldn't do this on my own. And I tried a lot of different things. I tried a lot of different methods, and none of them worked. The only thing that worked was a disciplined program for me, a discipline program
time.
Where, thank you, where I was, you know, really working hard on my recovery. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Shlomi Tana B. Shawnee B., will you share with us now, followed by Matt J. Good morning, Shawnee.
Good morning. Can I be heard?
Yes.
Hi, good morning. This is Shawnee B. from South Florida. Thank you for having me, and thank you for the foundational, like, this meeting. What I'm trying to say is I always know this meeting is here. I always know that I can come to this meeting, and it's just a great stability. And so thank you to all the foundational people that make this meeting possible. I really appreciate knowing that I can come whenever I'm willing to be a part of this recovery and this fellowship. You know, I feel like this paragraph is so apparent to me right now. There is a lot of instability in my life, a lot of pain, a lot of fear. And I feel like through my recovery, what I've learned is that I can have God remove my fears and resentments, and then I'll be fine. I can have my fears and resentments removed, but it doesn't mean that the depth of pain will necessarily be removed. That has been my experience as yet so far in my situation right now. And sitting in grief and pain is very hard when you don't have what you used to have, which was that comfort that didn't fix things, but it just numbed. And I think as human beings in our society, we are always looking to run from the agony, from the pain. And I know that most of us get on the line and we share, you know, all the wonderful things about how recovery has changed our life, and because we're here to share the message. And I guess the message that I want to share today is that I'm here to show up even in the midst of feeling a lot of pain, a lot of agony, a lot of, you know, I'm asking my higher power to remove my defects, to remove my arrogance of not getting what I want, to remove the resentments, the fear, but there's still a lot of pain. And I do feel grateful for the willingness to share this, for the willingness to be authentic on this line, in what I'm, you know, really feeling today. And I hope that whatever message I'm sharing, I'm a little like confused as to everything that I'm putting together, but I hope that it can be of service to someone else. I feel like today giving to another person could be very comforting in the midst of pain and confusion. And I am so deeply grateful to my higher power for giving me the willingness in the midst of feeling betrayal and feeling pain to be willing to show up. And I think that's just a huge blessing. And for that, I'm grateful. Thank you so much for allowing me to share. I pass.
Thank you, Shawnee B. Now, Matt J., will you share with us, please? Please follow by Marin R. And tell us where you're calling from, Matt, please.
Yes, this is Matt J. I'm from Lawrence, Kansas. And not to be confused with Matt JF, that's happened before. But anyway, you know, it's the first time I've shared on the meeting. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I can't quite get myself to the point of saying recovered because I'm still fighting this thing. I'm not in the food. I'm working with a sponsor. That's a big difference for me. I have always had such trust issues that it's hard to give up control and allow a sponsor to give me direction. And, you know, it's better. That's all I can say. I'm trying. And it just comes down to, for me, allowing God to work in my life. And that's so confusing. It's such a broad, all-encompassing topic that I can easily get twisted up about it. However, the basic bottom line is, if I am willing to ask a higher power, which I don't understand, for help, and turn to the people that appear in my life offering the help in the form of sponsors, this meeting, other meetings that I go to online, in that regard, the pandemic has been a godsend as far as being able to reach out across the world and find help. I am getting this thing by gradual millimeters as opposed to leaps and bounds, but it is progress, and I'm grateful for your meeting. I learned so much. I love what was said about the pilot lights on, the fire may be out, but the pilot light's always burning. It's so true. Proved it over and over again that that's true in my life. And, I guess I don't have a lot else to share. I just wanted to speak up and claim my seat, I guess. And you all have a good day, and I'll just keep listening. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Matt J. Marin R., will you share with us now, followed by Arlene B.? Good morning, Marin.
Good morning. Hi, everyone. This is Marin R. I live in Northern California, and I'm really glad I came onto this meeting today. I'm still pretty new at OA, and these first two lines, how then shall we help our readers determine to their own satisfaction whether they are one of us, and the experiment of quitting for a period of time will be helpful, but we think we can render an even greater service. The experiment of quitting for a period of time. I think yesterday was finally the day for me that I gave in and surrendered, because I've tried every day. You know, I've balked it. I don't really want to do the steps. I don't really want to do OA. I don't really want to do the big book. And yesterday I was in I had tried so many times with my own willpower and failed repeatedly. In fact, if anything, what I noticed was my binging was getting worse. The more I tried to control it with my own willpower, the more I binged. And so yesterday it was kind of like I just felt like I give up. I'm flailing about this. I need help. I can't do it. And I've tried these experiments. They're not working for me. And so I'm really glad I got into this meeting, because what I did last night was I really started listening to some YouTubes and podcasts about the big book. And as I listened, I think it started to finally sink in, and I identified. It's like, oh, yeah, that's me. That's me. That's me. I hear it now. And before, it was like I had, you know, cotton in my ears. I could hear it, but it didn't sink in. And so it felt like a big relief. It's that moment of clarity when, you know, it's not that I didn't think I was an overeater. It's just that I thought I could do it on my own. And the idea of the honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, I finally said, okay, I got to get really honest here and let go of this ego trip of I can control this, I can use my own willpower, stop the experiments and give in, because it's not working. If anything, it's just making it worse. And open-mindedness, I'm willing to start doing the process. Willingness, I'm still working on that. I'm willing to be willing, but I know that it will work. I do believe it will work. I think part of it is just doing the process. And the more I do it, the more relief I get. And that's the payoff for it. And so yesterday what happened with that sense of relief, I didn't have the desire to binge. And I'm just going to keep at it day by day. So I'm really grateful for this meeting, and thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Marin R. And now Arlene B., will you share with us? And then we're going to open up the lines for a few more names. Good morning, Arlene. Star one to unmute, Arlene.
Okay, you can hear me now. Hi, I'm Arlene. I'm Arlene from Coconut Creek, Florida, recovered for today. When I think about the mental twist that leads to picking up, you know, I know that every time I have relapsed in the 40 so years I've been in food fellowships, starting with OA and eventually coming back to OA, it's been because I've felt like a victim. And it's because I've always been in fear, and the fear never had to do with the present so much as projecting. When I work, you know, working with sponsees now, I see that every time they have trouble with the food, they are in a state of resentment or fear. Well, fear for me is always the bottom line, the fear that I'm not good enough, that I'm not worth it, that I won't get what I want, or I'll lose something I have. And I always say to them and to myself, let's look at step three. Because when I started taking the steps, you know, I had to develop higher power that I believed would take care of me. And when I turned my life and will over to that power, you know, taking care of me meant not giving me more than I could handle. And for the present, I never have more than I can handle. It's only when I project into the future. I've been abstinent now with vision over a year. And although I'm still tweaking my food plan, you know, I don't have the desire to do anything that would hurt me with food. And I still weigh and measure and all of that. Write down my food at night and send my 11th step to my sponsor. So I feel like I'm on a good track and that I have something to offer to my sponsees. I'm in the process of, you know, buying a house, and I'm 80 years old. My husband is 86, and we're off on a new, you know, branch of life. And this is a great surprise to me. You know, one never knows what God has in store if you just keep going along and living in the moment. And it's been a great ride. I just, you know, I'm just enjoying it, and I'm enjoying my recovery, and happy that I can, that I have something to give to others, because that's the biggest blessing in my life, being able to help others recover from this
time.
Soul, you know, wrenching disease. Thank you very much for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Arlene B. And now I'm going to take a couple more names. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So I'll take two names of people who would like to share.
Janine J.
Janine J.
Yeah. Yes.
And Kristen, who R. was the R?
Kristen R.
Kristen R. Okay, very good. Janine J., Kristen R., and please let us know where you're calling from, if you would. And Janine, we'll go ahead and hear from you. Good morning, Janine.
Good morning, everybody. It's Janine J. from Silver Spring, Maryland. I'm happy to be on the line. This is a good paragraph to remind me of my most recent relapse. I had a gift come into my home, and, you know, I thought, oh, I've been abstinent for a while. I can handle this. I'm in remission from non-Hodgkin's leukemia or lymphoma, and my cousin sent me this lovely gift of chocolate-covered Italian wafers, and I thought, oh, I'll just have one a day. That won't be a problem. Well, we all know about this disease. I polished off one package within maybe an hour. And I thought, wow, this disease is doing push-ups in the hallway while I'm sitting here thinking I'm totally abstinent and can handle it. And it was a real wake-up call for me, because just because a gift comes in the door doesn't mean I can keep it. It was a very nice gesture. And I thought, you know, I need to regift the second package. I didn't do it. I ate half of it. And then I thought, I really need to regift the rest of this package, which I did do. But it was such an awakening for me. And next time I know that I'm going to regift something immediately and not keep it. But I think for me, it was just realizing, you know, I'd been in a vulnerable place, having gone through chemo, and, you know, just I just was feeling vulnerable, I guess. You know, it was like a very nice gesture, beautiful gift. But when it comes to food, I got to ask myself, is this on my food plan? And if it's not, get it out the door immediately. So thanks for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Janine J. And now we'll have Kristen R. share with us, please. Please tell us where you're calling from. Good morning, Kristen.
Good morning, and thank you for your service. My name is Kristen R. in Virginia. I'm a grateful, recovering, compulsive overeater. This paragraph says to me that there's a mental state that precedes picking up. So in my most sober moment, with my best thinking, I can pick up. And that's what I have to be aware of today. So what do I have to do? I have to work the steps, and I have to develop a conscious contact with my higher power so that when I do get into those thinking states, when I get into those moments where I think this might be a good idea to eat this, I can turn to my higher power and ask for the strength and direction to do the next right thing. I'm so grateful for this program because it's a design for living that really works. And it works in rough going. No matter what's going on in my life, I can turn to the program, can turn to the steps, can turn to my higher power, and I can find peace and serenity, even no matter what's going on in the outside world. I'm so grateful for that. So thank you for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Kristen R. And it looks like we have time for another share. Is there someone who has not shared in the last few days who would like to share with us this morning? Have time for one more share.
Hi, this is Ronnie, compulsive overeater in Missouri.
Ronnie, go ahead. And great to have you here. Go ahead, Ronnie.
Thank you.
And you have a couple minutes.
Oh, okay, sure, whatever it is. Anyway, I'm glad to be here. Paragraph, the reading was great as the shares what I identify with and my experience has been that I really prefer to have all non-planned foods out of my house. If it's, even if it's a yellow food, it's got to be gone. So talk about awarenesses. Years ago, I remember opening my desk drawer in my office, just opened the drawer. And I saw like one of those 1-inch by 1-inch chocolate squares. Well, I was stunned because in a matter of seconds, that was opened and shoved in and gone. And I remember thinking, oh, my God, why would I have to do something like that? No different than an addict would see whatever drug it was and shove it in or put a needle in or sniff it. It was instantaneous. And I have seen that in other areas of my life. You know, I'm in OA more than 30 years, and I have about 14 months of abstinence, of which I'm very grateful for, very, very, very grateful for. And when those other foods come in my house, because I've had gifts like that too. You know, I've had gifts come in, and I immediately know they're not for me. And if my daughter lives with me and she can eat that stuff. She can take it, she can leave it, she can eat it. And I said, hey, that's your life. And just because I have this problem doesn't mean you can't eat it. However, if it's something in the pantry, I prefer you keep it in your room. And so she does. Because, I open the pantry, I see it, there is no thought. It immediately gets shoved in. So about 13, 14 months later, it is better. It is better because I have opened the freezer and there it is, right? So I'm like, you know, just move it in the back of the freezer and maybe cover it up a little bit. And so when I take that pause, and I don't care if it's a 1 second pause, I remember hearing on the news one time this forecaster said, if you take 1 full second, which would be 1/1000, you can make a different decision. And so that is what I try to do today. In fact, that is what I do with any of those kinds of foods. Anyway, still recovering a little bit at a time. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Ronnie. And could you tell us your initial, Ronnie, the first initial of your last name?
Yes, sure. It's Ronnie B as in boy, and I'm in Missouri.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And thank you to everyone who shared. We're now going to close the meeting with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Freya H. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Keep you until then. Good morning, Freya.
Good morning. Based from page 164, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.